Hurricane Melissa hit Jamaica in October with devastating force. A Category 5 storm with winds of 300 kilometres an hour that tore the island apart. The repair bill is still being added up, but it looks as though it's going to exceed $6 billion US, and the work will take years. Aid is arriving. The Brits have promised £7.5 million, but Caribbean officials have gone to London to argue that their islands are owed far, far more from the United Kingdom. It is a mighty argument that the Industrial Revolution of the 19th century that's ultimately to blame for global warming was fueled by the fortunes of Caribbean slave owners. Climate justice cannot be separated from reparatory justice, argues Jamaican economist Mariama Williams. The same system that enriched the North created today's vulnerabilities. Natricia Duncan is the Guardian's Caribbean correspondent. She's usually in Jamaica, but she's in London at the moment to cover that meeting and joins me now. Natricia, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you, David.
What sort of state is Jamaica in at the moment? What's it look like?
It's a very challenging situation. I visited some of the worst affected areas like a day or two after the hurricane. I actually couldn't get to places like Black River, you know, which was considered ground zero, because it's the devastation is just mind-boggling. That's the best way I can describe it. Getting there, as I said, I attempted on the day, which was the Wednesday after the hurricane. Impassable roads because of landslides, because of severe flooding. Second day, which was a Thursday, I did manage to get there, but it felt apocalyptic. You know, you had to sort of drive through waters that unfortunately damaged the vehicle that we were in. There were vehicles stalling. It was total chaos, people desperate to try and reach their families. And once you got there, it's something that was quite emotional to see. You had people with children trying to set up shelter at bus stops. There was even some looting. It was just totally flattened. Buildings that were there for hundreds of years. There was a church there, for example, and it was just completely destroyed. It looked like a bomb had gone off. When I just arrived, I tried to speak with this lady, and she said, you know, there's just been another debt, and she was about to go to the police station. But it was, the best way I could describe what I saw that day was apocalyptic. I mean, since then, it has been a bit of a grim assessment. You know, $29.5 billion in terms of losses from the agricultural sector, which, as you could imagine, is critically important. 70,000 farmers affected. As you said, that's $6.7 billion. And obviously, there was some insurance, but that's only $150 million. And so, you know, we're talking 360,000 people. When I last checked it, this was last week. I don't know if that has been updated in terms of the number of people affected. 60% of tourist assets affected, which, you know, Jamaica economy is so based on tourism. So this is, for all intents and purposes, it is a really serious crisis.
I take it that the principal way Jamaica earns cash from the rest of the world is actually through tourism. What's happened to hotels and tourists?
Well, this is what I was saying. Last I checked, the report said that 60% of the tourist assets were affected. Obviously, it hit Montego Bay, and Montego Bay is one of the areas that has lots of hotels, all inclusives, and really nice hotels there. And, you know, those hotels suffered some damage. I know that there were tourists there. Actually, I had a cousin who was in a hotel in Montego Bay when it hit, and they, you know, they obviously did their best to look after people. So it's going to take a while. I have last seen that the tourism minister was saying that by December sometime, I think it might have been mid-December, that, you know, the tourism industry will be up and running again and ready to welcome tourists. But, I mean, you know, this this was a historic event, you know.
Yes.
And
you've had hurricanes before, but this is the biggest that's ever hit Jamaica.
Yes, according to the records I've seen, it is the biggest that has ever hit Jamaica. I mean, if you look at other hurricanes like Beryl, for example, and Gilbert, they were also quite significant. And I think what I have heard from a lot of Jamaicans was that Gilbert had more of a sort of widespread impact in the terms of that it hit more parts of the country. But when I spoke to people on the ground in the most affected places, and we were talking to people in their 60s and their 80s, and all of them were saying to me, I have lived in Jamaica all my life, and I have never, ever seen anything like this.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Natricia Duncan, who is the Caribbean correspondent for The Guardian, about Melissa and about the arguments that are being put in London and at COP30, that something particular is owed to the nations of the Caribbean. Natricia, take us through this argument step by step. First, the point that slave money financed the Industrial Revolution.
Yes, so this is actually an emerging argument, which it's quite interesting to see. And it's something that is now developing. Obviously, CARICOM reparations is something that has been a movement that has been going since around 2013. And it started with this recognition that Caribbean nations were impacted and continue to be impacted by enslavement, by colonialism, that the people who lived there were predominantly people of African descent. They continue to feel the impacts, the effects of something that European nations used to build their own economies and their countries. And one of the arguments is that when most of the Caribbean nations who are in a group called called CARICOM, Caribbean Community, they are 15 members. Most of them are English speaking. Of course, you have Haiti, which is French speaking and which was owned by France. And you have some other members that were owned by Dutch colonies. But, you know, what they all have in common is that they were former colonies. And one of the arguments is that when they did get their independence, you know, starting from the 1960s and upward, they were left with a colonial mess, someone said yesterday, that a mess in terms of a large portion of the population were illiterate at that time. There were not enough schools or hospitals. There was nothing really to start a country and to start developing in a way that is sustainable and in a way that will catch up with the rest of the world. And so, first of all, there was a crime committed as well, and I think that is an important point in this. And so where there is a crime, there needs to be justice. And those are some of the arguments that I've been hearing from the Reparations Commission when they're saying that, you know, these are the important things. What has happened in the past is that the CARICOM Reparations Commission has outlined 10 points. They call it a 10-point plan, which basically says what reparations should look like. So, for example, it should include an apology from the European nations who colonized these countries, and a full official apology. It should include some form of financial reparations, such as debt cancellation. There should be some form of sort of looking at some of the impact, psychological health impacts that slavery and colonialism has had on these populations. So that was sort of the argument. But recently, there's now been a rising voice linking, you know, climate justice and slavery reparations. And as you rightly said, you know, the argument is that slavery and the Industrial Revolution was basically made possible by resources provided by colonialism and enslavement. And so that is another element of the conversation that is now sort of being discussed. And currently, that 10-point plan I mentioned, CARICOM is looking at revising that, although they haven't as yet shared what the new plan or what the new, or if the change is the updated 10-point plan.
Natricia, explain to us what CARICOM is.
So CARICOM is a group of Caribbean nations, and so it's 15 nations and I believe 7 associate members. And so basically it's an intergovernmental group and they represent the interests of these 15 countries. They act together on issues like climate change and, for example, reparations. They've been looking at different issues such as freedom of movement between them. So this is, it's essentially, it's an intergovernmental. So it's what probably to describe is a mini commonwealth in that sense.
Right.
But it's a very tight-knit group.
And this is a new argument that they're putting, that there is a responsibility from Britain and other northern countries for the damage done to the climate and tracking that damage down in some way to the exploitation of slaves and the exploitation of the West Indies. But how is that argument being received in Britain? Is it being taken seriously?
So I want to make it clear that this argument, it's not currently a sort of it didn't emerge from the CARICOM Reparations Committee in that way. It is part of the global movement, but I just want to make that distinction.
Yes.
Although it has been raised, this argument, like at COP at the moment, there are a group of humanitarians, environmentalists who have been pushing this argument. And so this is almost coming from the ground up. So, you know, there are two things I think that we need to be aware of. You have the climate justice argument that the Caribbean has been pushing for decades now. And, you know, that is something that, again, CARICOM is very passionate about. They've been, you know, sort of at COP and in all the international arenas, they have been saying that they have been unjustly affected. They're bearing the brunt of climate change that they did not cause or they contributed very little to. And so that is a very long and ongoing argument. I think what is now happening, and as I mentioned, this is a new emerging idea of putting both that climate justice, that pursuit of climate justice and the pursuit of reparatory justice together. And that is something that lots of different groups are pushing and that CARICOM, the CARICOM Reparations Committee is now looking at.
So it's being put simultaneously, really, at COP in Brazil and by this delegation in London. Who is the delegation in London talking to?
So the delegation in London, they're talking to UK parliamentarians, they're talking to academics, they're talking to civil society. And what they're aiming to do is to sort of have a sort of public education outreach. And this is because lots of people, they think, in the UK are still not aware of Britain's role in slavery and in colonialism, and that the impact, the lasting impact that it has had on communities in the Caribbean. And I think that is one of the things that they have seen often from what they consider to be misleading reports in the UK press and in comments, for example, on social media and in other forums where people you know, are saying, oh, there's one misconception that they were really keen to address, which is that, you know, this reparations commission is coming to the UK to, you know, take trillions of dollars and break the treasury. And this is one of the things that they really address, that it is not about coming to the UK and extracting money from the UK. It is about looking at something that this colonial mess we mentioned and looking at how they could together repair this and you know, what How could they have a mutually beneficial solution to what has happened? And this is what they've called for is a summit where these Caribbean leaders and the UK can sit down and work out what that should look like, or you know, what remedies. But yeah, they were very clear that this notion that they're coming to just, you know, just leave with a boatload of cash, that was not the aim. It is about you know, a restorative justice program that is mutually beneficial.
And how do you rate the chances of such a, you know, a high powered meeting of minds taking place?
Well, according to, I mean, I could tell you, according to the CARICOM Reparations Commission, they made a point yesterday that this is something that, you know, they believe in, that they're passionate about, and that they believe could be made possible. I mean, we saw last year when the Caribbean nations at the Commonwealth Leaders Summit, this was in Samoa in 2024, when Caribbean leaders wanted to put slavery reparations on the agenda of CHOGM, the CHOGM, which is the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, there was a big pushback from Britain, and they were saying, we want to be forward-looking, we want to focus on modern-day challenges. We do acknowledge that slavery was abhorrent, but we need to be looking forward. However, At the end of that meeting, you know, there was an agreement in the communique, in the leader's statement, to start, you know, having a meaningful look at this and address this. So what I can see personally is that I can see that this group is having an impact on these Caribbean. Yeah, I mean, they represent the Caribbean governments, and you know, you could see that the whole movement is beginning to grow. I mean, I find it, I've been covering reparations, and I've known about reparations for a while, and I am just, you know, struck by how this is now becoming a global movement, and how now it's at COP. And, you know, you have all of these groups and organizations at COP, including the UN Forum for African People, who are saying this is something that we need to look at. So to me, that this is growing into a very powerful movement.
Natricia, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
I've been talking to Natricia Duncan, Caribbean correspondent for The Guardian. This is Late Night Live.